Hello, and welcome to Media Ministry at Holden Village. Today's date is September 2nd, 2004. Today's session number is DRP 2004-04. Today's speaker is Peter Drury, and the lesson for today is Vocation Discernment in the Bible and Today, Conference Call. Let's listen in.
Media Ministry, that we're ready to begin the recording for today. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
My name is Peter, if we haven't met so far. Many of you have been here at prior sessions, but I'm delighted to meet you and work with you and work at living into the scriptures together. We're looking this week, as is the theme at Holden, around questions of discernment. So we'll do that today. I invite you to join me in a word of prayer. Gracious God, abounding in love and mercy and justice and hope, we give you thanks and praise for this very moment, for this very place, and for your very world in which you call us to be your hands and your feet, extending your mercy here and everywhere. Through Christ we pray.
Amen.
Well, I'm going to make it easy on you today. Yesterday we looked at Jonah, and I said you could find that because it was right after Obadiah. So today we're going to be in 1 Corinthians. So see, that's just before 2 Corinthians, right? So we're making it easier on you. And specifically, we're going to go to the chapter immediately before the one that's so famous. So what's the famous chapter in 1 Corinthians? Okay, so we're going to 12. 1 Corinthians 12. Don't worry, once you open up your Bible, we're not going to read it right away, but better we open it now. Because you know, if you've been in class this week, we're going to sing a psalm first, right?
Yeah.
You've been in my class long, you know that. So today, we are going to sing one verse out of Psalm 27, which goes like this. The Lord, let's see, I'm a tenor, I just start too high, I gotta start lower for everybody else. The Lord is my light and my salvation, of whom shall I be afraid? Of whom shall I be afraid? Maybe some of you know that tune, that's in the gathering and no one has done it. Let's try that together.
The Lord is my light and my salvation. Shall I be afraid? Of whom shall I be afraid?
Do that one more time and close your eyes and just sing that as a prayer.
The Lord is my light and my salvation. Of whom shall I be afraid?
Been looking this week at questions of discernment, which I'm going to remind you for a moment. My own PowerPoint works. We're talking about discernment. In fact, we're working toward a working definition. I keep on purposely not defining this. In fact, watch out, because today I'm going to ask you if someone can help me code a good definition. But to discern is to perceive or distinguish or know. Those are really more synonyms than they are definitions. And our best guess is to separate by sifting. To separate by sifting. And so we're talking about that in the scriptures. And we started out with a sense of waiting on call, waiting on the Lord, waiting on God's call. The second day, how do we know it's God we're listening to and not ourselves or not something else? Third day, we talked about, can't we get back to you later, oh God? Can't we just save that message and come back to it? And today the topic is conference calling. Conference calling. And that's really a matter of how do we discern actively in community. How is that distinct from discerning on your own? I once heard Thomas Troeger. Do anybody know who Thomas Troeger is? T-R-O-E-G-E-R. If you look in some of your newer hymnals these days, you'll see his name down at the bottom with some other new hymn writers. Thomas Troeger is a professor in the Iliff School of Theology in Denver. He's a Presbyterian and has written some very lovely new hymns. He talked about being on an airplane and sat down to the, next to the person next to him. And those of us who are religious professionals get really nervous when someone turns you on the airplane and says, "Now, what do you, what do you do for a living?" You know, and you're kind of tempted to say, "Well, I'm actually on parole and my officer's in the back of the plane," right? Because that'll just kind of sometimes stop that conversation. Because if you say, "I'm a pastor," I mean, just who knows what direction the conversation will go. But if you're going across the country, it can go a lot of directions, that conversation. And, you know, once in a while, it's a great thing that you said, or just, "I'm loosely connected with the church in some way." Because more times than not, you spend the next 5 hours crossing the country, hearing about all the things that you probably believe in the wrong way, or don't you preach about this, or do you preach about that, or someone just feels uncomfortable next to you because they're not comfortable with all the religious people who talk like that. And so then they're kind of like, "Oh man, I don't want to talk to this guy next to me because he's a pastor, so I'm just going to read my, whatever." So it's really kind of awkward on the airplane for religious professionals to answer and say what they do. I have yet to meet a clergy person in the modern era who doesn't at least wonder when they get on an airplane what they will say. Some of us just say, "Well, I'm in teaching, or I'm in counseling." Sooner or later, we all kind of fess up, I think. But you're just kind of nervous of those, where that could go. Well, Thomas Troeger, the hymn writer and poet and flutist, he's actually quite remarkable as a preacher. He'll sometimes bring his flute into the pulpit, and he integrates the music and art in his preaching. So he must have answered and said, "Oh, I teach in a theological seminary," and the person kind of raised their eyebrows, but then didn't say much. And so then he kind of felt compelled to ask a question back, because he didn't know what his first impression was. And Thomas Troeger describes the conversation went something like this. The person next to him said, "Well, I'm a Christian, but I don't participate in an organized church. I go to church on the internet. I log on at whatever time, and I click on, and I watch a worship service." And, Thomas Troeger's trying to be, with a lot of us, involved in the renewal of the church in the modern era and reaching out to people in new ways. And so he thought he'd ask some questions, and he said, "Well, gosh, what's that like being a Christian, who's a part of a church on the internet?" And he said, "Well, actually, it's great, because I learn what I can learn, and I don't have to deal with all the people." So then the burden was on Thomas Troeger for the remaining of the 3 hours or whatever in the conversation. And he wasn't sure, where does he take this conversation? So I'm wondering where you would take that conversation if you were on that airplane with the person who said that. Now, this is not a comment, just to be very clear. I'm not making a point about the internet. I'm making a point about being an individual Christian cut off from community, right, who doesn't want to deal with the people, and being a Christian in the context of community. Any of you have thoughts about how you might, take the person on the airplane out of it. None of us probably really want to preach at the person next to us about this, but does that make you uncomfortable at all, just notion? Because I know it does me. It kind of rubs me the wrong way. Any thoughts about that? About, can you be a Christian in isolation? There's certainly some history to it in the monastic tradition. So
you might say, "How's that working for you?"
How's that working? Yeah. Or you might just say, "I hear you saying that you go to the..." Yeah, how's it? But does that make sense to you? If you could do Christianity without all the people, would that be satisfying?
Sometimes. I could relate to him saying that. And also, I think that community is not necessarily church. Mm-hmm. I would ask him, who are the people you hang around with?
Yeah.
Mark, I'm the ambassador.
Oh, the church is getting out of dealing with these people.
Well, right. Church is not a building, it's people.
That's right.
But I think, I mean, Jen makes a really good point. I think, to me, there's kind of two sides to that coin. I mean, sometimes what we get all involved in at church, there's a lot of people dynamics that really distract us from our spiritual focus. I mean, this probably doesn't happen in any of your churches, but... But, I mean, I can imagine maybe that there's some churches out there who've had a situation kind of like, you know, in a church that I served, where sometimes attention gets drawn, or even maybe all of our attention gets defined by the budget, or the building and grounds, or the committee structure, or the bylaws, all of which are critical. I mean, just to be clear, I'm a big fan of budgets and bylaws, and I am. But sometimes those take over and they become the vision as opposed to a way of supporting the vision. But have any of you, you probably haven't ever been in a church. Okay. So I think Jan's right. There's kind of a two-sided coin where all coins are two-sided, right? it's like two sides of a coin, I should say. That sometimes our peopled dynamics can get in the way of our spiritual journey, but by the same token, being entirely isolated, I mean, aspiring to be a member of a church community on the internet so that we don't have to deal with people, also profoundly misses the point. Remember earlier in the week I was saying that in terms of discerning around interpretation of the scriptures, talking about this idea of resonance, I said, you know, think about something like the fact that Jesus said, you know, when asked what was the most important commandment, and he said, love God with your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And my sense is that if I'm interpreting the Bible, that in some way keeps me from loving God with my full heart, soul, mind, and strength, and loving my neighbor as myself, that I'm probably interpreting the Bible in a peculiar way. I mean, I ought to be reading the scriptures in a way that I'm led to be resonant with the core message of Jesus. So this is kind of backdrop. We're talking about discernment in community. And so that's what brings us now to the chapter before the famous chapter. We're going to 1 Corinthians 12. Now this one's a little more kind of theological and wordy and textual, but you'll have to remember that yesterday we read a very fun story about a whale and a boat and a guy who fell off, and you know, we read the Jonah story. So today we're going to do, this is a little more wordy, there's not big pictures on this one. This isn't the boat and the whale. But it's really good material. It's really good material. And so we're actually going to work our way through the lion's share of 1 Corinthians 12, and I'd like to do it like we've done earlier in the week. I'll read the first verse, and if you feel called to read one of the verses, just read one. Popcorn style, anybody who wants, and we'll just work our way right through this chapter. 1 Corinthians chapter 12. Now concerning spiritual gifts, brothers and sisters, I do not want you to be uninformed.
You know that when you were pagans, you were enticed and led astray to idols that could not speak.
Therefore, I want you to understand that no one speaking by the Spirit of God ever says, let Jesus be cursed. And no one can say, Jesus is Lord, except by the Holy Spirit.
Now, there are varieties of gifts, but the same Spirit.
There are varieties of services, but the same Lord.
There are different kinds of working, but the same God works all of them in all men.
To each is given the manifestation of the Spirit for the common good.
To one is given through the Spirit the utterance of wisdom, and to another the utterance of knowledge according to the same Spirit.
To another faith by the same Spirit. To another gifts of healing by the one Spirit.
To another the working of miracles, to another prophecy, to another the discernment of spirits, to another various kinds of tongues, to another the interpretation of tongues.
All these are activated by one and the same Spirit, who allows to each of one individually just as the Spirit chooses.
For just as the body is one and has many members, and all the members of the body, though many, are one body, so it is with Christ.
For in the one Spirit we are all baptized into one body, Jews or Greeks, slaves or free, and we are all made to drink of one Spirit.
Indeed, the body does not consist of one member, but of many, many.
If the foot would say, because I am not a hand, I do not belong to the body, that would not make it any less a part of the body.
And if the ear would say, because I am not an eye, I do not belong to the body, that would not make it any less a part of the body.
If the whole body were an eye, where would the hearing be? If the whole body were hearing, where would the sense of smell be?
But as it is, God arranged the organs in the body, each one of them as he chose.
If all were a single member, where would the body be?
As it is, there are many parts, but one body.
The eye cannot say to the hand, I don't need you. And the head cannot say to the feet, I don't need you.
On the contrary, the members of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable.
And those members of the body that we think less honorable, we clothe with greater honor. And our less respectable members are treated with greater respect.
Whereas our more respectable members do not need this. But God has so arranged the body, giving the greater honor to the inferior member.
That there may be no dissension within the body, but the members may have the same care for one another.
If one member suffers, all suffer together with it. If one member is honored, all rejoice together with it.
Now you are the body of Christ, and individually members of it.
And God has appointed in the church first apostles, second prophets, third teachers, then workers of miracles, then healers, helpers, administrators, speakers in various kinds of tongues.
Are all apostles? Are all prophets? Are all teachers? Do all work miracles?
Do all have gifts of healing? Do all speak in tongues? Do all interpret?
But strive for the greater gifts, and I will show you a still more excellent way.
So keep that in mind the next time now when you hear the famous chapter that comes next that begins, if I speak in the tongues of mortals and angels but do not have love, am I a clanging symbol? There's context there. Text and context. Strive for the greater gifts and I will show you a still more excellent way. Now there are varieties of gifts but the same. I think sometimes when we talk about, it's really easy, for example, to talk at Holden Village about jobs and work roles. I mean, we can say that, like, I don't know if I would make a very good maverick, but I wonder if maybe I would make a good bus driver. I might do okay in the kitchen, but, maybe I would prefer lawns and gardens. And it's pretty clear for me that when I'm in the dish pit, I can't say to the kitchen, I have no need of you. And when I'm doing garbology, I can't say to the registrar, I have no need of you, right? For if all of Holden Village was an operations manager, where would the directors be? If all of Holden Village was the musician, where would the spiritual director be, right? I mean, it would be easy to bring that kind of language, and that's appropriate. This text is going underneath that, actually, and not talking about jobs and functions. It's talking about spiritual gifts. spiritual gifts. And so the metaphor of jobs and vocations and activity is very, very compelling. The foot can't say to the hand, I have no need of you. You know, the plumber can't say to the electrician, I have no need of you. Those are metaphors. But where this is going is towards spiritual gifts. And sometimes, at least for me, and maybe for some of you, we freeze up at the language of spiritual gifts because we start hearing things about speaking in tongues and apostles, and it just sounds like something kind of other than my direct experience. Although, as one who coaches and encourages people in the way of prayer, there is certainly a spiritual gift of speaking in tongues, and there's certainly a form of prayer that relates to praying in a language you've never learned. I don't believe for a minute that everybody has to do that. But there are people who do that. In the same way, there's some people who are most nurtured in prayer through contemplation, and there are others who are most nurtured in prayer through embodied action that is prayerful. So when we look at spiritual gifts, for example, we lifted up the other night in the Village in Vespers, hospitality is a spiritual gift, and as a part of the liturgy around that, a good bunch of people in the village who felt a sense of call to the ministry of hospitality came forward. But a real good chunk of us were in the outside circle who came forward to bless the people who felt called to the ministry of hospitality. How many of you were here when on Monday night when we did that? Okay. So to be really clear, we drew a distinction. We sifted, in a sense. I mean, liturgically, we sifted. And we said, if you feel a call to this ministry, we want to bless you. And the people who are standing back, there's no reason at all to feel badly or guilty or, I mean, if we don't feel called to the ministry of hospitality, that's okay. But we need the ministry of hospitality. And there will be some future time at Holden, or maybe there have been bazillions of times in the past, which is probably true, that the ministry of teaching, or the ministry of caring, or the ministry of prayer, or the ministry of parenting, or the ministry of, I mean, whatever, where those are lifted up, and it's other people who stand back and come forward and bless. That in spiritual community, in an intentional spiritual community, in addition to dividing up tasks of garbology, and dish team, and housekeeping, and laundry, and maverick, in addition to those kind of practical issues, to really live with integrity in spiritual community, we need to be able to greet the Christ, the Spirit alive in each other in a spiritual sense. So when we use terms like discernment of spirits, and speaking in tongues, and apostles, most of us think, well, maybe that doesn't have a whole lot to do with me. But in fact, you know, if we crack open some of this language, it's actually quite a bit more accessible than we might at first think. I'm going to, I've been telling some stories this week, and I'm going to resist the temptation to tell a story at this point, because I would like us to tell some stories to each other. I've been standing up in front, and folks have been listening here, and this is, I'm going to give you two questions. We're going to have a moment of silence to kind of reflect on them first, and then I'm going to have you break up in groups of three or four. Don't worry, I won't count if you're two or you're five. You're not thrown out. I mean, but basically, three is probably the ideal number. And I'd like you to share some stories or images with each other, because I think it's going to help us talk about this a little more constructively. So here are the two questions. The first one is, has there ever been a time in your life when somebody else named in you a gift that you did not see for yourself? Has there ever been a time in your life when someone else named in you a gift that you did not see for yourself? That's the first question. The second question is, has there been a time when you have noticed a gift in another person that they seem surprised to hear you affirm? Has there been a time when you have named a gift in another person that they have seemed surprised to hear you affirm? Let's take a moment to just be quiet and consider that before we just jump into talking. So we have two questions before us. Has there been a time in your life when someone has named in you a gift that you did not see in yourself? Or, and this is kind of an either, I mean, ideally maybe you've got some answers to both, but it's an either or, no pressure. You don't have to answer both or either. And so, or, has there been a time that you have named a gift in another person that they seem surprised to hear you affirm? And let's just break up into groups of three, and let's, we're going to take 5, 6, 7 minutes to do this. As much time as it takes. You know, and it's nice if you mix up with people you don't necessarily know. You know, I mean, you don't have to, but it's kind of nice to meet some new people in this process.
Different.
We rolled the dice up here early, because I had all the discussion of the car, and it's like, what thing, that's just comes out. And then they have the might be two. And what I can tell you now is like,
Take a few more minutes. I can tell these conversations are deep. We'll take a few more minutes.
Thank you.
As your group becomes ready, just look forward so I know you're ready, and we'll wait for folks to finish up. If you're ready, just look forward. Some amazing sharing going on. I can now share with you my temptation. I couldn't tell you this earlier, but my temptation this morning was to get to that point in this morning's presentation and invite you to sharing, and then just disappear and go into my day. Because those of you who've been a part of my Bible study know that I'm less interested in having us read the text, right, than to live into the text. And do you know what a privilege for me to sit here and talk about speaking in tongues. It was almost as though I was hearing this Pentecost babble in a sense. I couldn't follow anyone particular, but every once in a while, I would see someone maybe almost on the verge of tears, or I heard the word discern, or there was a person who caught you right at this moment. And I thought, you folks are, you're sharing in the word. I mean, that's, when we talk about text and context, this is the Bible, what you were just doing. Much more than this is the Bible. Are you with me? Some of you heard me say earlier in the week that this is only what, after oral tradition and sharing and experience like what you've just done, that some people said, oh, this is so good, we've got to write it down. So some people wrote it down, and then now we say, oh, it's a book, and we put it on a shelf. But it was not originally that. And so I really, my temptation was just to disappear. And then I thought that maybe by about 10 of 10, you'd start to think, I wonder what, and just let you live into this mystery today of what, you know, what happened, you know, was this thing. Because that, anyway, so maybe next year I'll try something like that. It just felt like it was against the rules a little bit. I'm kind of a big fan of a sense of closure, so I thought we'd better check back in. Seems like a topic that y'all had something to say. Anything in particular in your groups that really... like a theme within your group, or something in someone else's story that grabbed you, or what? Let's share with each other just a little bit about what do we experience there? What stories were shared?
I think one thing was that other people do recognize the gifts that the person has before the person themselves recognizes.
That is very common. Yeah. And so we need each other, and we need to trust each other when we hear that, don't we? I mean, if you've had that experience of noticing something in someone else, if they're really surprised and you say, gosh, you're really gifted at such and such, then 10 years later when someone says about you something and you're like, oh, you know, and it takes you another 10 years before someone affirms that again. I mean, how important is it that we trust and listen to one another and that we have the courage to speak to one another? Mm-hmm. I think one of the greatest gifts we can give to another person is if you notice a gift, even if it's someone you barely know. I mean, there are appropriate boundary issues, certainly, and you know, you have to be sensitive about that, but I've been in places in my life where I've just felt like, you know, somebody did something so outstanding, or there was such a subtle little something, and you know, if I had the moment, I said, you know, I know we don't maybe know each other that well, but I just want to tell you something I noticed, because that was so moving to me. And I mean, there are appropriate ways to say that, and you know, a little personal policy I try to have is that if I'm, and this is more with people who I know in the parish or in community with, but if I'm involved, like let's say you and I are having a very nice conversation about you, But you and I are having the talk, oh yes, we should pray. I really do try to make as a spiritual discipline a point of later saying, do you know, a couple weeks ago I was involved in a really nice conversation about you. And I just, and I don't like to have a nice conversation about somebody without them knowing what was said. Now that seems like a simple little thing, but in community, in spiritual community, that kind of thing is really important. So Lynette, I think you're right on. What other themes kind of came out, or what images?
Well, in our group, it was kind of the opposite. I mean, we had a hard time coming up with anything.
Did you?
So maybe we're kind of too much from the private. I'm from a Norwegian background. I don't know what the other problem one is German. And maybe showed a little lack of that kind of guidance, that it seemed to just be more private than guidance that we got.
And that's okay. See, there's varieties of gifts. that's okay. But so your group, that's interesting that you were drawn together too then. So that also... A little less of that. That's okay. Who else?
I think just to continue what the other speakers were saying is that it seems so common for us to discount our gifts.
Yes.
And that for someone else to name them as a gift, it is often a surprise.
Yeah. And I should add, as you say that, you know, I said just a moment ago about affirming in somebody else a gift you see, I should be really clear that I think it's really important that's sincere. Because if that's insincerely done, really can do damage in a person's life. I think of an experience, for example, of visiting a church on a Sunday that I had friends in this church, but it was not my church, and a young person gave the message for the day. And it was remarkable. I mean, a young girl, maybe junior high, I mean, somewhere in that age group, spoke with real wisdom. And I really felt called afterward, kind of in speaking with her parents over coffee. I mean, I didn't know this family or these folks, but I just really wanted to, she really spoke with wisdom to a group of people, and I thought, you know, she might get a lot of feedback today, like, good job, you spoke well, or, you know, that, or you had confidence. And I just really had the sense that I wanted to kind of share with her and her parents, you know, you really spoke with some wisdom today that really, I mean, I really felt compelled by it. And to me, that was a very sincere comment. Now, I wouldn't have just gone, let's say that she hadn't spoken with wisdom. I mean, who knows what that looks like. But, you know, but if I just kind of made that up, oh, gosh, you did this wonderful, and gee, you should think about becoming, I mean, that'd be a really damaging thing to do. So it's not, I don't mean to take this lightly. But you're right, you know, you can be so surprised, how do you account for that, Cammie, that we get so surprised to hear about a gift named about us?
Well, I think for myself, part of it was those messages I heard growing up about pride and arrogance, not being self-centered, and that sense of don't ever put yourself above somebody else.
Right.
And all those kind of downsides. Of what might be our blessings and our gifts.
How many of you were raised like I was with a kind of a thumper theology? Remember thumper? If you can't say something nice about somebody else, don't say it at all. Sometimes thumper is a little more influential in Christian theology than Jesus. They have some related themes. But this sense of, you know, not saying anything bad, and don't put yourself first, and I just, when you said, oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, the group of one up here, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's what you
have. The one thing I noticed, like, I was just thinking the other day when I looked in the mirror, the one person you never get to see with your own eyes, but a reflection in a photograph,
yep,
is yourself.
Yep.
Sort of like maybe the ants going through the forest cleaning, but does he know that's his purpose?
Yeah.
It's hard to see self as you live in it.
But yeah, we'll never. We look out, and we see the world. We might contemplate, but you never, with your own eyes, really ever get to see yourself.
Yeah, the closest. Yeah, thank you for saying that. And what's your name? Because I don't.
John.
John. John's remark is great. I think, you know how funny it feels like if you're getting your hair cut and you're looking at the mirror at yourself for like 45 minutes while someone cuts your hair. I mean, for starters, that's just a kind of a peculiar time in life every, you know, for me about every 6 weeks or whatever that is that comes up. And then I think how superficial my image of myself. Because if I think about what others see in me, it's either, gee, how was my hair cut? Or am I shaved or not shaved today? Or, I mean, and those really aren't the main things that we see in each other, right? But you're exactly right. So when we do look at ourselves, it's almost by definition a superficial observation. I think that's a really wise statement. Right.
Well, I think the great corrective in this chapter is this little phrase, for the common good.
12:7.
And to each is given the manifestation of the Spirit for the common good. And it's, we're not talking about common better or common best. It's just common good, you know. And it's common. It's and it's kind of down home, understandable.
Yeah.
And all of these varieties of gifts, you know, can just be understandable, day-to-day things, insights, gifts shared, and there's a givenness about it, and it's where it comes from, you know, it's inspired by the Spirit, and it's not, it's, and it is among us.
Thank you, Roy. That's amen. I don't know about others of you, but I, when coming to Holden Village, there's always this great thing about the anticipation. You know, I mean, it takes a long while just even to get to Fields Point. I mean, just to get to the point when you're departing to get to Fields Point from wherever in the country or the city or wherever you're going. But then you get on a boat, and you get to the dock, and you know, I always love that moment when the bus driver, and I'm going to say this because Molly's a bus driver. But I do, I love, I mean, it's one thing if the bus driver just to say, you know, welcome, get on the bus, be safe, don't stick your fingers out the windows, we're going up some switchbacks, boom. I love that there is warmth from the bus driver. Do any of you have, like, because that's your connection. You've taken the long boat ride, it's taken you, maybe you've been traveling for 24 hours, I mean, in a certain kind of travel, you know, you're packing up and you get moving. And the bus driver gives you a warm welcome. To me, that's a... That's for the common good, right, Roy? I mean, that's a, I love that moment. I really, I miss it, it doesn't happen. I mean, no, it always happens, It really does, I love it.
Peter?
Yeah?
One thing I wanted to add in terms of not recognizing gifts in yourself, I think sometimes there's expectations that because of who we are, gender, whatever, that there are certain gifts we should have and others that don't fit.
Excellent. Yes.
And maybe some big burly guy who, you know, is kind of rough looking and somebody, and he has a real talent for listening to people.
Yeah.
And people tell him that.
Yeah.
It's like, gosh, it couldn't be me.
Right. Oh, well said. Well said. In fact, there was, at Holden, Molly will know his name, I think it was Terry, but a wonderful guy who was the first bus driver who greeted me when I came to Holden. And he was kind of, and what a gentle, you know who I'm talking, yeah. Is Terry, is that right? Terry Lee, just a gracious, listening, warm soul. That was actually my first, I'm right with you, And all these messages we get about gender, race, class, sexual orientation, our sense of, you know, rich, poor, whatever, those things really, you read a passage like 1 Corinthians 12 and it just doesn't have anything to do with that, does it? It's about spiritual gifts underneath the surface that really, I just love this. Now, there are varieties of gifts with the same Spirit. There are varieties of service with the same Lord. And there are varieties of activities, but it's the same God who activates all of them in everyone. To each is given the manifestation of the Spirit for the common good. And that's, there's something you can. Well, I'm still tempted to tell you a story. Let me tell you how.
Go ahead.
This is not a long one, because so, I believe in your getting out on time. This is pretty. I was a college student. The first part of my college career, I was back in the Twin Cities. I went to McAllister College in St. Paul. Did you go there? Or you know it?
I did talk there.
Your dad taught McAllister. Oh gosh. And I'll talk about that afterward. And then in the middle, and I kind of had some you know, big life change stuff that a lot of people do, you know, around your somewhere in the middle of college and you're asking big questions about life. And I left and I took a little time off and then I went back into school in Seattle at the University of Washington. But I had a wonderful year and a half, my first 2 years at McAllister College. And one of the courses I took, because I started out in comparative religion, I was kind of interested in taking a class in about every religious tradition I could imagine. And I was in an intro to Judaism class. And Rabbi Howard Jaffe, who was a rabbi in Minneapolis, who taught, I think, a class a semester. I mean, he was kind of adjunct faculty, was a rabbi of a congregation in Minneapolis. He would teach a class. There was another rabbi, Bernard Raskus from St. Paul, who also taught. And so Rabbi Jaffe was teaching this class, Intro to Judaism, and we read some interesting things, and we read a novel, and we read some books, and we kind of getting interesting. And at some point, around the middle of the term, I finally summoned up the courage to go up to him after class. And I said, Rabbi Jaffe, and I didn't really even know why I was going to say this or ask this, but I said, you know, when I was 10 years old, I had a sense of call into the ministry, and I didn't know what it meant. But when I was 10 years old, I told my parents that I had a sense of call to the ministry. And I said, today I'm really in comparative religion because I don't want to be the kind of Christian who's ignorant of other, you know, other religious traditions. In fact, I kind of like to learn from them. And I said, forgive my naivete, but we're at the middle of the semester. And I said, you know, other than the big questions of like, is Jesus the Son of God or not? Other than something like that, I said, I have yet to see any really big distinction between, you know, your religious tradition and mine. I feel like when I come to class, I feel inspired, I feel blessed by the stories and the teaching and the ethics. And I just kind of want to share that and see what he would say back. And he didn't say what I expected. I don't know what I thought he'd tell me. He said, Peter, see, when I was 10 years old, I told my parents I wanted to become a rabbi. And he said, if God really has that call for you, and if you really feel that sincerely, it's my prayer that you'll be able to pursue that. He said, it'll be fun for us to talk more over time, you know, about how our callings are different. But he said, I see in you gifts in that direction, and, you know, if that's your call, it's a tough one, but I pray you'll go there. Well, not too long after that time, I should jump in there. So then, for the remainder of that semester, I started going to a synagogue on Friday nights. I came to these Shabbat services, and I didn't understand a thing, because I had not studied any Hebrew at that point, but they had the transliterated stuff, so I could sing along with the songs. I didn't know what it said. And the liturgy was just beautiful. I loved it. And then I left St. Paul and was gone, and we exchanged a couple of letters, and I actually pursued my undergraduate degree in Judaic studies. I decided to really kind of go fully in that direction. And so other than writing to him once when I was preparing to go to Israel, as I spent a semester in Israel, and I wanted to kind of get some advice from him. That was the beginning of the first Intifada in summer of 88, and then it started about Christmas time of 87. And I kind of want to get his counsel on, you know, should I really be going now, and is this safe, and do you have any contacts, and, you know, that kind of stuff. Other than that, you know, then after that time, about 10 years went by, before I saw him again, and I actually had the good fortune of being back in he had moved from the Twin Cities, and he was now in the New Jersey area, and I, for some reason, was in the East Coast, around New York, around Passover, and was invited to be at a Seder in his congregation, a totally different congregation on the East Coast, and really wonderful experience. And the Passover Seder, there's two nights of the Passover. In fact, all Jewish holidays, the major holidays, are celebrated over two nights. And there's a really neat reason why that happens, but I'll tell you that later if you want to know. So then the second night, I got to celebrate it with his family. And, you know, I was really kind of curious, because here I kind of felt like this gentleman had been inspirational to me, or a mentor, and, you know, for 10-some years. I mean, that had just stayed with me, that conversation, that little conversation after class. Now another 10 years have gone by, and it's about time for me to track down Rabbi Jaffe again. But even though 20 years have gone by since that conversation, his affirmation and his prayer and his solidarity have stayed with me. And when I sometimes even wonder about, do I really have a call? Should I really be doing this? That's one of those conversations. He's one of those key figures, characters in my life who I remember saying, you know, I too had a call like that, and I affirm that in you, and it's my prayer that you can pursue that. So never take too lightly that if you affirm the gift in another, if you do that sincerely, never take too lightly that God might be working through you in affirming that gift. And on the other side, never take too lightly that if another is sincerely affirming your gift, that God might be working through them. Christ be in your steps, and also in mine. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.